Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, Josh.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
I don't know why I have a cartoon voice. Well, we're talking about cartoons, so I guess it's appropriate tonight,
huh? It does indeed fit.
I don't know why I chose that. It maybe some weird thing in my brain. I don't know.
You know, it works. That's the important thing. It works.
So, do you want to do the Adam and Eve promo?
Sure.
So do it.
Okay. I thought you just meant in general. Do you want?
No, I'm like, okay. Do it then.
All right, fine. If you go to Adam and Eve, and as you check out
.com,
AdamandEve.com, and as you check out, you put in the promo code static, you get a bunch of stuff. You get 50% off one item. You get 3 free DVDs. You get a special mystery gift. Who knows what it could be this time of year? You know. With Valentine's and all that.
This airs after that, so
I know. But, it's not going to hit air tomorrow.
And free shipping in the United States.
And free shipping in the United States.
So
again, just use the code STATIC. Plus, you get a nice warm feeling because you're helping out Josh and I.
And you get something to stick up your butt.
Well, depending on what you order, yes.
So, you and I have talked about cartoons quite a few times on this show. We're obviously big cartoon fans.
We have never talked about cartoons, and I hate all of them.
I'm sure you do. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the culture of a certain era of cartoons and more of the behind the scenes of why we don't have something you and I have lamented numerous times, like Saturday morning cartoons died off.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Do you know what actually killed Saturday morning cartoons? We'll get into more detail later, but in general...
Well, you mentioned it earlier, to be fair. I didn't, and it's been puzzling me for a long time.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, I won't say single-handedly, because Transformers and G.I. Joe and Thundercats really helped, but He-Man started it, really is what killed Saturday morning
cartoons. But I
really
like Transformers and G.I. Joe and...
Thundercats.
I was never a big He-Man fan, but...
Yeah, well, let's go back in time to Saturday mornings. Saturday morning cartoons were where even in our era, I mean, it was still going strong in the 80s when we were kids. And it just kind of died out by the early 90s. You started to see it falling apart and getting less and less.
Yeah, I think after the WB. Really, it completely died when the WB became the CW. Because at least the WB had that four kids Saturday morning thing going.
And even Fox did with Sonic, the Turtles, and X-Men and stuff. They had the Fox Saturday morning, Fox Kids or whatever. But let's go back to a time when you got up early to watch these cartoons. You know, there were no VHS tapes. You were lucky if you got a rerun of these things. If you missed it, you hoped in 5 weeks that they'd show that episode again.
Yep.
And you had two big companies that were making probably 80% of the product for that.
Right.
Hanna-Barbera and their rivals, Ruby Spears.
Okay.
Those were the two big companies that were producing Saturday morning cartoon programming.
I know the name Hanna-Barbera. I mean, it's been around for years and... You know, it's pretty much exclusively Hanna-Barbera cartoons on things like Boomerang, which is...
Well, that came because Ted Turner bought the Hanna-Barbera library.
Right.
So he owns all that shit. He's going to use it, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, you know, Hanna-Barbera really is kind of ingrained. And it's some of those names like Klasky and Supo and Hanna-Barbera and Rankin-Bass. You know,
and to me, Ruby Spears is another one that's instantly recognizable
to
me.
I to be honest, I'm not familiar with Ruby Spears. Now, what did they do that?
Ruby Spears did, and now when I say this first one, I'm not talking about the one most people recognize.
Okay.
But like they did a Heathcliff cartoon. Ruby Spears did a lot of the action stuff, like Goldie Gold and Action Jack, and they did a lot of those like G.I. Joe knockoffs that came in the late 80s.
See, I don't think I was ever exposed to them.
Ruby Spears really? Did a lot.
I believe you. I don't. It's not, you know. Things that stick in my head when it comes to action card. You had Deke.
Deke was always kind of a weak company. Deke, right. Their animation was always really weak. And I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about the weak animation when we get to Hanna-Barbera on that. But Deke always was just kind of a bland company to me.
Yeah, and then there was the Heathcliff that I remember that I don't know why it seemed like a Garfield knockoff to me, even though Heathcliff, I believe, came first.
Yes, he did, in the comic strips.
In the comic strips. But who did the one that we all recognize with the...
I think that was Deke, actually. I believe that was Deke. I might be wrong, but I believe that was Deke that did the one we always watched on Nickelodeon.
Yes.
And then you had Sunbow, which did Transformers and G.I. Joe and those types.
Right.
Inhumanoids and all that.
And Sunbow almost had a very Japanese style to them.
Yeah, and Sunbow was also partnered with Marvel Productions. So that's why like the Spider-Man stuff was very similar in style to the G.I. Joe style.
Oh, okay.
Because they were partnered with Marvel Productions, and I believe Sunbow even did some of the early 80s Spider-Man stuff.
Probably.
And hell, Spider-Man even popped up in a G.I. Joe episode in a news report once.
Really?
Kind of linking their universes. Yeah, Mainframe flipping channels when they're bored in an episode, and they flip past a news thing about Spider-Man was seen, and he just flips its channels. So technically, I guess Spider-Man takes place in the G.I. Joe, and since G.I. Joe and Transformers take place in the same universe... That really wow. Yeah.
We could have had a Duke Optimus Prime crossover.
We did in the comics.
Did it really?
Yeah, they had a G.I. Joe Transformers miniseries in the comics back in the 80s.
Now, before we go any further, a listener sent me a picture that some college students did it was actual research where they laid out in a graph. You remember when we talked about universes crossing over and everything was coming back to Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah.
And all, well, they actually graphed it out.
Is Saint Elsewhere the center of the TV universe?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, it takes up a huge chunk of it. But I apologize. I don't remember who sent this to me off the top of my head, but thank you very much. I've been going over that, and I'll have to show that to you a little bit later. But
G.I. Joe and Transformers were permanently connected in the cartoons.
Really?
Okay. In a third season episode of Transformers, which is the after the movie stuff, you know, with all the new characters,
the weird
Optimus Prime's
futuristic
dead,
right? Yeah,
is the futuristic year of 2005.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which I'm sure seemed really far off when they made that.
It seemed really far off in 2004, to be honest. So it was.
But there was an episode where Cobra Commander appeared as a character named Old Snake, looking like Cobra Commander, voiced by Cobra Commander, or voiced by Chris Latta, and they referred to him as his former terrorist organization's technology, and they specifically brought up the synthoid technology that was used on the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then there was another permanent crossover in season 3.
All right.
The commander of Earth Defense Forces, Marissa Fairborn, that is the daughter of Flint and Lady J from G.I. Joe. And Flint even appears as her father on a video screen in one episode, still voiced by the same actor. His last name was Fairborn.
Oh, wow.
So Marissa Fairborn character from the third season of Transformers is the daughter of Flint and Lady J. So that's a permanent crossover between. And they also had, which also crosses into Inhumanoids, the character of Hector Ramirez. He was a Geraldo Rivera knockoff who had the TV show 20 Questions.
Okay.
That show and that character appeared on Inhumanoids, Transformers, and G.I. Joe. So through Hector Ramirez, all three of those cartoons are connected universe-wise.
Wow.
Yeah. Suck on that, hi, people that are listening to us, hi.
See, I'm really confused, though, because didn't Inhumanoids, or am I getting confused with Thundar? Didn't it take place in the in the future of like one of those 1990X deals or
no?
No.
I mean, Humanoids took place in contemporary like 1987.
Okay.
So no.
Okay.
But this all goes back to you had all these different companies, and then you had other ones that did some things like Rankin Bass did Silverhawks, Thundercats, Tiger Sharks, right. The comic strip. They did those. So you had Deke, Sunbow / Marvel, and then you had Filmation.
Filmation, yes.
Filmation with He-Man, Bravestar, She-Ra, Ghost, the original Ghostbusters, things like that. So you had all these companies vying for dominance. And then Saturday morning was the watershed. That's where everybody went. You know, that's where we all watched.
Of course.
And at that point, syndicated cartoons. There was no real first-run syndication market for cartoons. It was basically reruns of Jetsons and Flintstones and things like that local stations would air. Then in 1984, that all changed. He-Man came on the air. It was only in 37% of the country. He-Man's ratings beat primetime network programming.
But also,
in only 37% of the country, this show was getting higher ratings than almost anything else on television.
But you have to understand also what allowed He-Man to come on the air. Well, you can actually thank Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, the deregulation of basically, you used to not be able to blatantly say, this is a cartoon that is trying to sell you something.
Right, right. And then when Ronald Reagan deregulated everything, we could finally jump back in and do the thing, and they could sell you stuff.
Right. And so He-Man broke new ground. And here was the problem. The Saturday morning cartoon producers could not keep up not only with the output, but with the budgets. The He-Man show was getting ratings that were dwarfing theirs at almost a tenth of their budget and producing five times as many episodes. So to networks, why should we hire Rankin Bass or why should we hire Ruby Spears or Hanna-Barbera to only give us 13 to 20 shows at five times the price when we could just buy the rights to He-Man and show that on a Saturday morning? Why even bother? And that was part of the problem. He-Man murdered Saturday morning because, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, the bar was set so low on what you could get away with that the Saturday morning cartoons could not compete anymore.
And it's really a shame because whether or not you like He-Man is irrelevant. The animation on it, cheap.
Actually, no. The animation on He-Man was rotoscoped. Rotoscope is not cheap, man.
I don't know. It always.
They reused a lot. Yeah. Yes, that was a cost cutting measure. It was reused, but the actual animation, it's not cheap to rotoscope something.
But it just, I'm saying this is one of the reasons I didn't like He-Man was because of, to me, it looked wrong.
And see, I love that Filmation look. Like even, I recently bought a Best of Bravestar DVD for like $1 at Walgreens.
Yeah, well done.
And just that style takes me back to my childhood. I love that style that Filmation had. Or even the Ghostbusters, the one with the monkey and everything.
Yes, the
technically the original Ghostbusters.
Right, right.
Because it's a cartoon sequel to the live action Filmation shorts from the 1975 run. So
right.
Technically they are the real Ghostbusters, technically.
Technically, yes.
But I love that Filmation animation. And see, here is one of the problems that like Hanna-Barbera ran into, and I'm sure Ruby Spears and them ran into this too after He-Man just set the bar so low.
Right.
They used to, back when they were making Tom and Jerry cartoons in the 60s and 50s, they'd have to make a 7-minute cartoon, $35,000. Now put that in 50s and 60s dollars, okay? By the 80s, they had to produce a 22-minute cartoon for $3,000. That is a major ass budget cut. That's saying we're going to give you less than 10% of the budget we did before, and you have to produce three times as much product.
That's insane. Yeah.
And you, I'm sorry, you will lose quality doing that.
Yes.
That's why the Hanna-Barbera stuff, even if you go back to Scooby-Doo in the 60s and you go, oh, it's limited animation and whatnot, you look at the stuff they were doing in the 80s. It was more limited.
Yeah.
Because they could they had no budgets. Nobody would pay them. Because Filmation and Rankin Bass and Sunbow and that set the bar, so they basically underbid everybody without really trying to.
Right.
They weren't even trying to. They just underbid everyone. So He-Man is the reason that Saturday morning cartoons went away. But He-Man's also the reason weekday afternoon cartoons rose up. And I grew up on those too.
Well, the after school market,
and the
before school market too.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember you had He-Man, Thundercats, G.I. Joe, Transformers. You had the weird ones like remember Cops, COPS.
Yes.
You had Cops. You had just all these different ones. You had comedy ones, action ones, sci-fi ones, and you even had. Do you remember like some of the weird cartoon experiments like Super Sunday?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, I was... Who did Super Sunday? Because...
Sunbow Marvel.
Okay.
It was a Sunbow Marvel
production. That's right. That's when they had almost their action block of like... was that... That was when Spider-Man was on.
No. You're thinking of the Marvel Action Hour.
Okay.
No. Super Sunday was in the 80s. Marvel Action Hour was in the 90s.
Okay.
No, Super Sunday was kind of revolutionary for its time. It was a syndicated program, obviously meant to air on a Sunday.
Right.
And I'm going to name two shows that are part of this that you're going to be surprised were part of this.
Okay.
Super Sunday was a normal 22-minute, without commercials.
Right,
block
right.
That had a rotating block of 4 8-minute cartoons. So you'd only have three per week, and they'd alternate. You had Bigfoot, the truck.
I remember that, yes.
Bigfoot was part of that.
Right, okay.
Remember Robotics? Robotics!
Not really, but I mean, it's there's something sparking back there, but...
Well, okay, go to YouTube and you can see the Robotics intro. Inhumanoids started there as 8-minute segments.
Okay.
And so did Gem and the Holograms.
Really?
They were all 8-minute segments, and you'd have like, it would be like an 8-minute Gem, and then an Inhumanoids, then a Bigfoot. Then next week, there'd be no Gem, but it'd be an Inhumanoids, a Bigfoot, a Robotics. And then the next week, no Inhumanoids, but a Bigfoot, a Robotics, and a Gem, and whatnot. And it was four shows that rotated through every week.
And you
in,
know,
in 8-minute little kind of almost like an old movie serial,
right?
You know,
and now that you mention it, I do remember that because I was young and I don't
you had a crush on Gem, didn't you?
No, but growing up, you know how today and in the 90s, usually around that 8 to 12-year-old range, wrestling has gotten really really popular.
Wrestling, yes,
yeah. Back then, at least in my little town, one of the things that was really popular amongst that age group was monster trucks. You got to see the big trucks with the big tires crush the little cars.
I've never understood the appeal of that. And I know you used to do the Sunday promos.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah. Sunday.
I was going to say, do one.
Okay. And that was actually pretty weak. Let me move the mic away here for a minute and try another one. Sunday. Yeah, I used to do that kind of stuff
for the local TV
show. Monster trucks, and we'll sell you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Yeah, that was so cheesy.
But that was really big, and so when they had the Bigfoot cartoon, well, wow, And then Gem and the Holograms would come on, and I'd be like, oh, girl cartoon.
Yeah, the only reason I ever sat through Gem is they very wisely always either stuck Gem at the front or middle. So the boys would sit through Gem to not miss the beginning of whatever was the third cartoon that week was.
Well, see, Gem was always my cue to go into the kitchen and get more Golden Grahams or cereal of some sort.
But see, to me, I watched some of the Inhumanoids on DVD. And man, even though they're cut into 22-minute episodes that they re-syndicated, you can see exactly where, okay, this was the end of, you know, chapter one and chapter two. And you can see the stories are structured in that way too. So basically every 8 minutes you've got a huge cliffhanger, and then it just goes right into cleaning up the cliffhanger.
There you go.
In all honesty, watching them on DVD as episodes, it kind of loses the flavor because, hey, we got a big cliffhanger and we're going to resolve it right away. It just sort of seems anticlimactic almost.
So do you want to go buy like a gem DVD and if we can find it, other, you know, DVDs of like Bigfoot or something? And then
Bigfoot and Robotics were never put out on DVD. Only Inhumanoids and Gem were. And see, to me, I'm a purist. I would love if they would release the actual Super Sunday versions with the rotating episodes and the eight-minute shorts.
If they ever had Robotics and Bigfoot on DVD, you would be the kind of person that would actually cut together.
I actually have a couple old Super Sundays on tape from that era.
I mean,
this is Saturday morning, so it's not quite syndication, but do you remember Space Stars?
No.
That was a Hanna-Barbera one that it was the 1981, so it's the new updated versions of Space Ghost, the Herculoids, Astro and the Space Mutts, and Teen Force.
I remember the classic ones.
Space Stars was an hour-long program that would have 8 to 16-minute cartoons of each one, and they would constantly cross over. Space Ghost would appear in the Herculoids episode. The Herculoids would appear in the Teen Force. And then the final segment was always all the teams getting together to fight their common enemy, Uglor.
Neat.
Now, those have never been rerun, but all the different segments have been cut out, and Turner uses them as interstitial programming on Boomerang.
Oh.
Yet I want, just release the goddamn Space Stars versions. This is stupid, you know? This is just dumb to just cut them up. Why will you not release the Space Stars hour-long episodes? You clearly have the rights to them. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either.
And Astro and the Space Mutts, the Astro in that is actually the Jetsons' dog, Astro.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the Jetsons takes place in the same continuity as Space Ghost. Suck on that one, high people.
And dogs have a lot longer of lifespan, I think, in cartoons than in real life, unfortunately.
So do bears, apparently. Don't you remember Yogi's Space Race?
Where
Yogi Bear's like in the year 3000 and they're racing spaceships.
Yes, well,
so apparently bears have a long lifespan too. And then there was another one where Yogi was a police officer in space.
I don't remember that one at all.
Yeah, it was like Yogi's Space Patrol or something like that. I've got a couple of them on tape. Yogi was a space cop. Along with a shmoo from... Really? Yeah, there was a shmoo in that. There was a space cop too. And he was also a cop in Bedrock in the Flintstones episodes. In the new Flintstones, shmoo was a cop too.
How old are these shmoos?
Well, since shmoos are totally made up, I guess they're immortal.
I guess maybe.
Shmoos don't die, maybe? I always liked shmoos, though.
Yeah, they were kind of cool.
You know, it always reminded me of the Herculoids. Remember that they had their little blobbies?
Yeah. Gleep and Gloop. Gleep and Gloop, yeah.
Yeah. It was just always reminded me of those.
Well, you know, the shmoos were probably created in order to compete with Gleep and Gloop.
I think the shmoos predated them, actually.
Really?
In comics,
then
yeah.
Then Gleep and Gloop were created to...
You want to know another fucked up connection?
Sure.
Not a universe connection, but a weird meta connection. Remember the shirt tails?
Yes. Yeah, little animals that wore t-shirts and had cute adventures, yes.
Do you know what Digger's favorite TV show is?
No.
Space Ghost.
Really?
He would actually watch Space Ghost episodes on Shirt Tales.
Was that, maybe that was a little homage or something?
Yeah, but it's just so weird that the Shirt Tales like Space Ghost. This is getting strange now, isn't it?
But this coming from a guy whose sister was obsessed with Manji Cheese.
That's another Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
Remember the Pawpaws? The Pawpaw Bears?
I don't remember the Pawpaw Bears.
Or the Biscuits with a K?
No.
You don't remember them?
No, I'm sorry.
I remember all these. A lot of them were flash in the pan. You know, 13 episodes, you're gone, and then something else replaces you.
Right. Well, you mentioned one that I do remember that I think this one was around for longer than 13 episodes, but Quickie Koala.
Yeah, I love Quickie Koala. I always had a soft spot for Quickie. But another Hanna-Barbera one you brought up earlier, Thundar.
Yes.
I loved the shit out of Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh, who didn't want one of those swords?
The sun sword?
Yes, or at least something that as you waved it through the air. I mean, that
sound. Wah, wah, wah.
That sound was almost cooler than a lightsaber.
And I just love, how long has it been since you've seen the opening of Thundar?
It's been a while. I think you made me watch it a while back.
We're going to play the open from YouTube. You need to see this again before we continue talking about this.
Okay,
so,
hold it. And I'm going to hit the pause button this week, not the stop button.
They don't know what that means.
I know. You got a two-part episode a while back and
no,
don't
you
even
didn't.
Know it. Hang on. Okay.
So now, obviously, you guys can't see this, but you can always YouTube it for yourself. But Scott, this is the Thundar opening. You got to remember, this is 1980, okay?
Okay. All righty. All right, so here's the...
Thundar, the Barbarian! The year 1994. From out of space comes a runaway planet, hurtling between the Earth and the Moon, unleashing cosmic destruction.
Half. That's so beautiful.
Man's civilization is cast in ruin. 2,000 years later, Earth is reborn. A strange new world rises from the old. A world of savagery, super science, and sorcery. But one man bursts his bonds to fight for justice. With his companions, Ookla the Mock and Princess Ariel, he pits his strength, his courage, and his fabulous sun sword against the forces of evil. He is Thundar. The Barbarian.
Now you got to remember.
Yes. It played again on its own. It does that.
No, it doesn't. You went to hit pause when it stopped, which meant you hit start again. You're an
idiot. Oh well, that's okay. It happens.
Now you got to remember, this is 1980. Kids' cartoons, the massive restrictions that they had on violence and whatnot,
yep.
the way they nerfed all the Super Friends and all that.
Oh yeah.
Okay. A planet moved between the Earth and the Moon, splitting the Moon in half and stripping away Earth's atmosphere.
Yes, pulling all the clouds.
Okay, and we saw whole cities sinking into the ocean. We're talking millions and millions of people that just got killed.
And I think that was
every week.
Yeah, wasn't that two volcanoes that erupted right outside of LA?
Yeah.
Or San Francisco? No, San Francisco was swallowed by the wave.
Yeah.
For some reason, Thundar the Barbarian hated California.
Well, and so you just got to think, this is technically the most violent cartoon on TV. They killed a planet.
Well, yeah. Well, heck, I mean, you split the moon in half, and let's talk about the gravitational repercussions.
I do like a nice little attention to detail, though. Throughout the whole series, the split in half moon is always in the sky.
Yeah.
They always remember to keep the moon broken half. I thought that was a nice little attention to detail that they had.
It was a nice touch.
And Thundar has one of the most awesome Easter eggs ever to find. In one episode, you can tell to the month when this episode was animated.
Because of
Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah,
the movie
this.
Theater is showing Revenge of the Jedi. And I just thought that is absolutely beautiful.
So my question is, when did the
events
of
They were also showing Jaws 9.
When did the events of Thundar take place?
1994. Well, the comet happened in 1994.
Right.
And then it says 2,000 years later, so...
Right, so 3,994.
Yeah.
3994. So the year after you and I were supposed to, well, the year after you and I graduated from high school, that's when all the crap went down.
Yep. And I'm sure in 1980, that seemed like a long way away.
Sure.
Too. You know, I'm sure. Just like the Transformers being set in 2005. I'm sure 1994. Why 14 years in the future? Why not an even 20 or... It seems like such a random year to pick, doesn't it?
Or you do what a lot of Japanese cartoons and games do, and you go,
1990X!
Yes.
Yes, I remember a lot of that in the video game era.
Or in the year 20XX.
Well, everyone was making that joke about the Nintendo game Street Fighter 2010, you know, when 2010 rolled around, they're like, oh my God, we're in the Street Fighter future. It's like, oh, shut up. That game was made in like 86. It seemed so long away then.
Yep.
But like Thundar, you had certain shows on Saturday mornings that hit so big. How many episodes do you think there were of Thundar, knowing that it ran for 7 years?
Let's see here. 7 years, what, 13 a year, you would say? So, gosh.
I can tell you right now you're way off.
Okay, but I would say 91.
21 episodes.
Really?
It was so popular they kept running the same 21 episodes for 7 straight years on Saturday mornings.
There really?
Are only 21 episodes of Thundar.
No. There's... I don't remember.
There are 21, and they ran this for 7 years. This wow. show ran on NBC until 1987.
Wow. So was there ever a conclusion?
No. No. It's just like Dungeons & Dragons. That show ran for 6 years.
Okay.
Only had 27 episodes.
Really?
Only 27. Again, they just kept rerunning them. And then they canceled it before the final episode, which had already been scripted, where the kids actually do get home.
But that script is online, because you showed that to me.
And they've made an audio drama of it. They got back most of the original voices.
Really?
It's on the DVD that you can listen to it as basically a half-hour audio drama of the never-filmed final episode.
I got to hear that.
But now, here's the weird thing when it comes to D&D.
Okay.
And that D&D cartoon.
Okay.
And they point this out in the documentary that's on the DVD. There are numerous people, you know, for years in the early days of the internet that remembered the episode where the kids got home in the final episode and they were looking for
it. But it was never made.
They never made it. They're like, you people, I don't know what you're remembering, but it's not an episode of our show because we never made an episode where they got home. Well, okay, technically they did, but they went back. They did make it back once. But Venger followed them, and their weapons wouldn't work in Earthrealm. So it was, we either lead Venger back to the realm, or he's loose on Earth. So maybe they were technically on Earth for about 5 minutes.
Maybe that's what they remember then, or they're somehow confusing the two. Or it's the birth of a fan fiction.
Might be. And one of the cool things about the D&D cartoon, they did establish rules. Such as there was one episode where a kid from Earth got pulled in later on, and they'd been in the realm for over a year. And they're like, you know, are our parents looking for us? He's like, what are you talking about? I just saw you at the fair a few hours ago.
Ah, so time works.
Travels differently. It's, so a year in the realm, they've only been gone a few hours on Earth, so no one's even missing them
so
yet.
So is it D&D or is it Narnia?
Well, and then there was another great one. And I really wish Standards and Practices hadn't made them nerf this a little bit, because in the original script, it had a lot more power. But in the original script, it was a Nazi pilot with a swastika on his plane that gets pulled into the realm and learns about why he's wrong. They nerfed the shit out of that, so they had to change it to a World War I pilot, a World War I German pilot and whatnot.
Dang
but
it.
If they hadn't nerfed that, that would have been a damn powerful one.
Yes.
You know? And then the soldier ended up getting back. And you know, they said, you know, tell people what you saw here. And, you know, we never saw the conclusion to that. But that was really interesting.
Hmm.
And, you know, they did set up rules of how some of this stuff would work. And I thought it was... I loved the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
I did, too. I remember enjoying the heck out of it. Now, there were a few characters I really couldn't stand.
Eric, I'm going to guess.
The one with the shield?
Eric the Cavalier.
Yeah, Eric the Cavalier. I was never a fan of him.
The writers actually say he is arguably the most realistic character in that, because he's the one that, you know, if any of us were transported into a realm like that, we'd be panicking and screaming and pointing out the illogical thing of a creature like this existing. And, you know, we wouldn't be all heroic and all that, would we, most of us? So he's arguably the most realistic character.
I completely agree. He is arguably, but that's not what I want in my fantasy cartoon, damn it. I want, now I couldn't stand the The
Bobby one, the Barbarian?
The Bobby the Barbarian. Well, no, Bobby the Barbarian wasn't too bad. I mean, he was a little redheaded doink, but no, the Ranger.
You didn't like Hank?
Well, Hank, I didn't like characters like Hank in general. That one that it seems like everything that was good and happy happened to Hank. Because, you know, he comes in and he's got that magnificent blonde mullet.
Do you know who voiced him?
Who?
Willie Ames. Buddy from Charles in Charge.
Seriously?
Yeah, and from Zapped, that Willie Ames voiced Hank.
Wow. You know, now that you mention it?
You can hear it. You can hear it in your head now?
Yeah. I'd like to hear Hank quote lines from Zapped. God, that movie was terrible, but fun.
Do you know who voiced Uni? Frank Welker.
Frank Welker voiced Uni?
Frank Welker, well.
Well, Welker is known for his creature work.
Yeah.
I mean, and God, I wish he would.
I just think of, I love Welker's normal voice when he's like, I am also Nibbler's speaking voice.
Yes.
You know, whenever Nibbler talks, that's normal
Frank
talk.
That's Frank Welker, yes.
But he's not doing a voice. That's just Frank Welker talking.
That's how he is. And yes, he enunciates everything like Nibbler, too. It's
There was this old Saturday morning How They Do It special hosted by Scott Baio from like early 80s when they first started doing Muppet Babies.
Yes.
And it was funny watching him fuck his lines up, because he's like doing Kermit, and then he gets the voice way too low, and he goes fuck, or not fuck, because you know it's for TV.
Right.
He's like damn it, I keep doing Kermit, baby Kermit, baby Kermit, and he's like, you know, getting himself psyched up, baby Kermit, baby Kermit, and it's just kind of funny seeing that behind the scenes process. You know?
I love watching that process, and I adore Flubs. I love cartoon Flubs.
You've heard those famous Thundercat ones,
right? I was
going to
say, one of the most famous reels being the Thundercat. Asamo, what the fuck is a Samo
flange?
Which the new series that came out just recently.
Oh, yeah, the one that got canceled right away.
Yeah, the one, which was unfortunate. But there was one scene where Panther was fixing something.
A Samo flange?
And he asked, he goes, could you hand me the Samo flange? And I was just like, nice. Wait, well done. And then, you know, to hear Mumra just go, motherfucker! If you guys have not heard this reel of Thundercats flub-ups, it's
fucking hilarious. Like, you know how it's thunder, thunder, Thundercats to make the Sword of Omens grow?
Yes.
He goes,
oh, yes.
Thunder, 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 Thundercats. He goes, oh shit, I'm making it grow too big. There's just all these beautiful, beautiful outtakes.
Oh yeah, and they're all available on YouTube. Look at them up. Oh, they are so funny.
And some of them are not Thundercats. A few of them are Silverhawks.
Right.
Because I recognize some of the characters. The voices are people that only did Silverhawk voices. So I'm like, okay, some few of those are Silverhawk outtakes too. I wonder how those make it out, though. I really do.
Audio engineers.
Just somebody kept it for themselves.
Somebody. I'll tell you the truth of that tape. It was during the filming, a particular audio engineer, and none of them have stepped up and admitted it, but a particular audio engineer found it so damn funny that he edited together the flub tapes, and you know, back this was back when cassettes were being traded.
Yep.
And you had the two guys that recorded their neighbors that were always fighting, and that tape actually eventually became a documentary called Shut Up, Little Man.
Or the tapes of the bar owner, Red, that was the basis of Moe on The Simpsons.
That's
For the prank calls.
Yeah, the prank calls. You know,
those people
you
kept pranking Red. That bar.
And this was just one of the, because I was first introduced to these flub-ups, and not just Thundercats, but plenty of other shows, animated shows that had flub-up tapes that would just circulate amongst the audio community. I found them at the guy that ran the college radio station I worked at. And I'm like, Thundercat fuck-ups? What are those? And this is on a one-inch tape. And
yeah.
He's like, oh, you got to hear this. So we spool it up, and he plays it. And I mean, And I'm like, this is great. Where does this come from? And he's like, I don't know, but look at all these that I have.
Well, it's kind of the same thing. You've heard the famous Orson Welles
pee
commercial.
Oh, yeah.
That was only saved because the audio engineer was just getting so frustrated. He's like, you know what? Fuck Welles. Fuck him. I'm saving this to prove what a dickhead he is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's a lot of the great comedy and the great human moments out there are thanks to pissed off engineers.
have you ever heard the William Shatner sabotage?
Yes.
I don't say sabotage. I say sabotage.
You say sabotage. You might say sabotage. I say sabotage.
He's just arguing with I think it was Gene Coon directing. He's just arguing with Gene Coon. And
just to argue. He knows he's wrong. Yeah. He doesn't give a shit.
It's like, I'm sorry. Kirk does not say sabotage. Kirk says sabotage. Whether you say sabotage, you got to do it like, you know, acting. You have to do it like your character would do it, you shithead.
Exactly. Hang on just a minute.
Scott can't take it anymore. He's going to play.
I got to do it. This is...
Just listen to this.
You've got to snap out of it, Lion-O! Call the Thundercats before!
Shut up, you fuck! I should have known the Territor didn't mean us any harm when the Sword of Omens didn't obey me. And anyway, it was just plain stupid to assume it might be bad. Just what the fuck am I talking about?
Let's find the mega condenser. I'm saying that too fast. Let's find the mega condenser. Still going too fast.
What's wrong, Lion-O?
Oh, fuck, here it is again.
What's here again?
That thing, that mega thing.
Want me to say it?
Yes!
And keep your foot off that blasted Sommel flange!
What the fuck is a Sommel flange?
I have to do that again.
Motherfucker!
You fucking god, yeah!
Shut the fuck up!
Get over here, bitch!
Ah! Damn!
Let out the fucking plank, boys!
Come here, motherfucker.
You've got to get back to the lair, Panthro, before those mutants do something drastic.
Come on, I mean, get yourself together. Come on, get yourself together.
I want to see your tits, Spider.
Can't hold on to it any longer.
Can't stand it. Going to pass out.
And that was missing the Silverhawks ones, too.
Yeah. But
yeah, I love those things. I don't know how we got onto bloopers from Saturday morning cartoons. It just kind of went in.
It happens.
Because, like, I would love to find a blooper tape, a real blooper tape from, like, a Transformers or G.I. Joe.
They're out there.
Or He-Man. I've never heard any of those. I would love to hear some of those.
I have heard rumors of those tapes circulating, and yeah, you would think that in today's day and age somebody would have digitized them at this point, but who knows? I mean, you know, they Hasbro, who owns G.I. Joe and Transformers now and stuff like that, and have always done the toys, but now they actually own the animation side as well. They have a very, very, very heavy legal foot.
Yes.
That comes down on stuff. So if they're out there, I'm sure somebody is holding on to them and is scared.
That's why you do it anonymously. You release it anonymously, for fuck's sake. You know? You don't have to...
Yeah, I know.
You don't have to take credit for it.
I know.
I guess it would be kind of easy to narrow down.
Yeah.
Okay, there were only two engineers working at the company at the time this was taken.
This one's dead. Yeah. This one's dead. This one's alive.
We're pretty sure it's you, motherfucker. Yeah. But then you've also got just the issue of, I think as the Saturday morning cartoon viewing audience got older and we were inundated with all these first run syndicated cartoons that were stripped, that were 5 days a week, why should we go out of our way to watch a cartoon once a week when as soon as we get home from school, it's on there every weekday?
Yeah.
I think that syndication changed it changed it in our child brains. Why should we make the extra effort to get less? Make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, there was something about those Saturday morning cartoons, though, that even they were just better.
Yes and no. But I liked the more adventure ones that in the syndicated market, like Defenders of the Earth and He-Man and G.I. Joe and that. I liked those better than the relatively bland Saturday morning. I mean, you were aiming at different audiences.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
The cartoons were vastly different. And I'm sorry, but some of the things you could not do on Saturday morning, you know, subject wise, you could in the first run syndicated. Like in the pilot of Defenders of the Earth, they kill Dale. You're not going to be killing the main character's wife in a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was very different audiences, but for some reason.
Or Robotech. Jesus Christ, the violence in that.
Oh, yeah.
Remember in the first episode when that Zentradi tripod fires a gun point blank into a VT's canopy and a flaming skeleton flies out?
Oh, yes.
You're not doing that on Saturday morning. No.
Well, no, and Robotech had, I mean, they killed main characters.
Well, technically they had to because they were just reappropriating already established, you know, an already established Japanese series.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I mean, like when Roy Fokker died,
exactly,
that took you majorly by surprise, man.
Oh yeah.
Or when Captain Glovel and all the Bridge Bunnies died at the end of Macross.
Yep.
You went, holy shit. Or Ben. When Ben died, remember Max and Rick were able to get away when the SDF-1's shield exploded and Ben couldn't make it and was vaporized right in front of us? And
yes.
He was a main character. We went, what? Huh?
Roy Fokker, by the way, always flew the coolest plane.
Well, Rick got his plane after. Rick ended up getting his VT after Roy died.
I know, but Roy Fokker?
Fokker.
Roy Fokker. Always had, because it had that skull and crossbones on the tail and that beautiful yellow and black.
Well, and hell, I mean, just going back to Robotech, talk about mature themes, Roy and Claudia.
Yeah.
An interracial couple
on
80s cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little progressive there because Roy's white, Claudia's black. Not exactly something you saw too often in those kind of cartoons.
Yes, and it was indeed shocking.
Yeah, they were doing things that I think that was another edge that the syndication had, and the other would just be saturation.
Yeah,
you're seeing Robotech and He-Man and all that 5 times a week. You're seeing Dungeons and Dragons once.
Yep,
the He-Man is going to worm its way into your brain a lot farther.
Yes,
coupled by the fact that most of the Saturday morning cartoons were not supported by a toy line. Most of the syndicated cartoons
were.
So you just had even more saturation into your brain.
Yep. That's why you had Transformers toys, G.I. Joe toys, of course.
Thundercats.
Even
Cops and Defenders of the Earth and Ghostbusters and all that. You had toys for all that shit.
And
then you had some that made that weird transition, like the real Ghostbusters. First season, Saturday morning on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
ABC cancels it. Goes first run syndication. Goes first run syndication for 4 seasons and then goes back to Saturday morning. How fucked up is that? That it was both.
Yeah, that's
bizarre.
And
back again.
That's bizarre. What exactly is the legal story behind? Because I know you had the Ghostbusters based on the shorts from the 70s.
The Filmation cartoon.
And then you had the real Ghostbusters.
Okay,
so
what
speak.
Happened was is Ivan Reitman made Ghostbusters.
Right.
The 1984 movie. And the problem is he didn't know about the Ghostbusters. Now remember the old TV show
was
a space.
Dash.
It's Ghost Dash Bus or Ghost Space Busters.
Right.
He didn't know about that. Now, see, when Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis wrote the script for Ghostbusters, the movie, they did know about it. And they actually tried to license from Filmation the original show. When that didn't happen, they went along anyway, assuming at some point the title would get changed, which it didn't. So the movie comes out. It's a big hit. All of a sudden, Filmation goes, you know what? We got a legit copyright claim here. So they send Reitman and was that Paramount? Universal?
I think it was Paramount.
Well, they send whatever the company was a letter, and basically a dump truck full of money is driven over to Filmation's offices.
So I wonder if that dump truck full of money that was driven over to Filmation offices, I wonder if that funded some of the cartoons
of
our childhood.
I'm sure it did. And then when Filmation saw that the Ghostbusters movie was such a hit, they said, perfect time to bring back the Ghostbusters.
Sure.
And they were going to be called the original Ghostbusters. But then part of the deal, I actually think it was Columbia that made Ghostbusters,
okay.
I think. But then Columbia said, well, we're coming out with our own animated series. So they worked out more money and more legal nonsense to say, okay, since most people don't remember your Ghostbusters show and ours is the one in the public eye, we get to be called the real Ghostbusters and you're called the original Ghostbusters.
Ah, okay.
So that's basically the legal story behind that. Another really funny Filmation story. Do you remember Jason of Star Command? Yeah, that live action.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Jason of Star Command at the time, incredibly expensive show. You know,
yes.
Just in the post-Star Wars, we can do all this stuff with effects. Now remember, the villain in that was played by Sid Haig from The Devil's Rejects
yes.
and all that, just in case people don't know. He played the villain Drago. Now, the funny thing is, Filmation was having a legal dispute with another company over something else. I think it was over the Tarzan license that they had for a while.
Okay.
And the Tarzan people sent their lawyer over. And they were filming a Jason of Star Command episode at the time. And he said, I want to talk to the boss. And he was being all rude to the secretary. So the secretary says he's right there and points to Sid Haig in full Drago makeup, drinking coffee, you know, between takes. And she said the lawyer just got up and left. Yeah, so Sid Haig as Drago apparently was what they used to throw lawyers off the scent back when they were making Jason of Star Command.
To be honest, if I was an unknowing lawyer who wasn't familiar with Sid Haig's work or Sid Haig, the guy at conventions and stuff, and how nice of a guy he actually is, yeah, he's a little intimidating.
Especially in the Drago makeup the armor and all the cape and everything.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't remember what Drago looks like, he kind of looks like, and I'm not trying to be homophobic about this, he kind of looks like, what if a flaming gay designed Darth Vader? That's kind of what Drago looks like.
You know what I always pictured if a true, like, your stereotypical homosexual fashion designer did Darth Vader?
Joe Spinell from Star Crash.
No, my brain always goes to the golden skeleton-headed dude from Flash Gordon.
Clytus? Really?
Yes.
Clytus is just golden skeleton head in a black cloak. He's...
Yes, but it's both class and fabulous all at once.
He also was made of black liquid, apparently, because remember when he got killed, he melted into black goo.
Oh, that's right.
When Clytus got stabbed on the rotating platform
yes.
thing where Baron and Flash were fighting.
Well, there were a lot of people that, because there was the green-blooded dude.
Yeah, well, the all the tree people were green-blooded, yes.
And
well, speaking of that, Filmation was also one of those ones that did something that was very expensive at the time. Now it looks kind of cheesy, but they were the first to do this. Hologram images. Remember from the Flash Gordon cartoon from the 70s? They would actually integrate holograms into the laser beams and things like that. So it would have this shimmer effect that normal animation could not do. Again, going back to they used a lot of rotoscoping and a lot of real practical effects to accentuate the animation.
I'll have to look that up because I don't quite remember those effects, but
it's from the series was called The New Adventures of Flash Gordon.
Okay.
And look up the Filmation one and you can see those hologram effects, and they look, like I said, they're both impressive today and cheesy.
So real quick, in the last couple of minutes here, are there any series out today or live action series that you would like to see translated into a cartoon?
Well, that's actually a future topic. We're going to talk about, you know, the weird cartoons that get made out of live action, like Ace Ventura and Police Academy.
Oh, yes.
That's a future topic, so I'm not going to touch that now because I think we can fill a whole episode with that goofy nonsense.
All righty.
So on that note, thank you for listening. When this airs, hopefully if the Jackalope situation is not rectified, I have a stopgap I'm working on that hopefully works. 1201beyond.com is back up, and we might be able to be hosting the shows there.
Good.
Assuming you people don't rape our bandwidth.
There's also...
Hoping you people don't rape our server, and then hopefully this will be back.
Yes, and we apologize for all of the Jackalope issues.
Thank you very much for joining us. It literally is not our fault, yeah. Nor is it Todd's, as much as I'm sure Scott would like to blame him.
No,
I
would.
It's not Todd's fault.
I know it's not his, but nonetheless, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.